Good morning. You are listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. A Merry Christmas to you. And I thought I might come on and talk just a little bit about one of the most famous events of World War I, the Christmas Truce. It's an event that to me is indicative of a lot of the cultural change that occurred during the first two World Wars. As a very brief aside before we get into the story itself, during World War I and World War II, only about 10% of soldiers when firing their weapons were actually trying to hit anything. Much more often the case was that these soldiers were shooting above the enemy or shooting at silhouettes or not really firing at anything in particular, or they were constantly reloading their weapons, something like that. If we flash forward to Vietnam, that number is up to 94% of soldiers trying to kill the enemy. Between World War I and Vietnam, something happened to our cultural understanding of killing and the violence a society can create through war and its acceptability. And there are a number of factors that we might get into a different day. But albeit simple enough to say, World War I was a more innocent time. The Christmas Truce is one of the most poignant events of the First World War, a time when men rose above the madness of that conflict and for just a moment saw each other as fellow humans. This event definitely did in fact happen. Thousands of men laid down arms in the truce, but a century of retellings has also kind of sanded down the rough edges of this story and oversimplified the messy reality. Indeed, this event wasn't just the result of pure human spirit and holiday cheer. It was a host of unique factors that drove these enemies to spontaneously declare peace in no man's land. And really, it may not have been all that spontaneous at all. Small armistices were happening every day in the front lines. As troops became accustomed to the rhythms of trench warfare, they learned that looking the other way now and again could bring a shred of safety and calm to their lives. The armies ate meals at the same time, which became a daily ceasefire. Patrols frequently ignored each other, adopting a live-and-let-live attitude. Troops often shouted to each other across the lines. After all, the autumn battles had passed and both sides were waiting out the winter. In reality, the weather was the primary enemy for both sides. The high water table at Flanders meant that the trenches were always filling with water, sometimes collapsing and burying men inside. Soldiers leaned up against the walls to sleep, trying to keep themselves out of the wet. Food supplies had to be hung up or dug out on ceilings, and the winter had been particularly miserable. Weeks of rain flooded the dugouts. The mud pulled men down like quicksand. Now, British Field Marshal Sir John French had noticed the hands-off attitude his men were developing towards the enemy, so he ordered attacks in late December to boost morale. This resulted in heavy British losses. Concerned about possible fraternization over the holiday, he issued orders that no unofficial armistice would be tolerated. Morale was much better over in the German trenches. After all, they were winning. But after many men were experiencing some homesickness as their first holiday away from home, commanders brought Christmas to the trenches, shipping thousands of presents out to the field. Each man received a gift from the Kaiser, cigar boxes for NCOs, a pipe with the crown prince on it for the ranks. The British, for their part, received a brass box from Princess Mary, filled with cigarettes, tobacco, a Christmas card, and sweets. And then they were given personal packages as well. Enterprises sprang up from home fronts, offering family members a chance to send gift boxes out to the troops. British soldiers received plum puddings and thousands of cigarettes. German and Austrian troops were bombarded with chocolate, salami, and cognac. Both sides received winter clothing. In truth, though, the gifts were kind of a nuisance. There was nowhere to put them at all, and soldiers had nowhere to store the thousands of extra cigarettes they had. But that Christmas Eve delivered a true gift in 1914. The rain stopped and the trenches dried out. Dry cold froze into mud on a hard surface almost like a floor. Snow dusted the countryside. That afternoon, the gunfire dwindled and in some sectors it stopped entirely. The weather just seemed too nice for gunfights. The Germans, stuffed with Christmas chocolate and cheered on by the weather, started putting up Christmas trees in their trenches. And then the German lines started singing. Over on the British trench, watchmen of the Scots Guard saw lines of lights along the enemy trenches. At first they suspected an attack, but then they heard singing drifting across no man's land. Silent Night, the original Austrian version of Silent Night. The British decided that they would drown out this carol with their own carol, but soon the ranks joined together in competition. They started yelling at each other, jokingly at first, but then a few walked out to speak to one another. Agreements formed in some sectors. Officers met at the wire and shook hands, agreeing to cease hostilities. In other areas, the ranks took their lead, Germans shouting across no man's land, "English, tomorrow if you no shoot, we no shoot." At times it was just one brave soul walking into no man's land, waving a newspaper. These overtures were extremely dangerous. Though peace was breaking out in certain areas, it didn't happen everywhere. One British regiment responded to German caroling with a machine gun blast. Some unarmed soldiers were gunned down trying to broker this holiday armistice. But in most sectors, the ceasefire held. The truce mostly happened between German and British units. The French and Belgian, whose countries were under German occupation, were less inclined, and their agreements to bury the dead and cease hostilities, but not as much fraternization. Yet a Bavarian unit held fire during French mass, and both sides halted fighting long enough for a guest, a soloist from a Paris opera, to make a performance. British Indian troops, who were unfamiliar with this whole Christmas idea, saw the German-lit trees and thought of their own holidays. They held fire, but also held position, until some Germans tempted them out of the trench with cigars and cigarettes. Soon the men were smoking together. That Christmas night, the troops slept in sublime quiet. Christmas Day dawned bright and cold, the sky clear for the first time in weeks. To their shock, British troops looked across no man's land to see the Germans walking around. Such a thing is suicidal on most daylights. Some ventured into no man's land on Christmas Eve, but in daylight it was impossible to ignore the bodies laying between the trenches. The two sides buried their dead in common graves, grieving side by side in joint services, listening to the faraway sounds of the battle from other sectors. And that shared experience broke down the wall. Soldiers milled about together in no man's land, swapping overabundant gifts from home, British beef for uniform buttons, chocolate cake for barrels of beer. They exchanged hats. One German barber gave haircuts. The men chattered. After all, they shared so much in common. They'd lived the same field under the same rain, and they were equally sick of war. Besides, they were curious. What was life like on the other side? Who were these enemies? One British officer was perplexed to learn that his new German friend believed that the armies of the Kaiser fought for freedom. That was impossible, the officer responded. They were the ones fighting for freedom. Amid this, a lieutenant found himself talking to another lieutenant from the German side who had something to pass on, a Victoria Cross and a packet of letters. An English officer had died in the German trench during the last attack. Perhaps he could give these to the man's family. Touched, the lieutenant removed his own silk scarf, a gift from home, and presented it to that German officer as thanks. Embarrassed, he sent a soldier to fetch some fur gloves as a return gift. Up and down the lines, kickabouts broke out with men from both sides chasing around balls among shell holes and sliding around on frozen ground. On both sides, they used this time to repair their trenches. Of course, for some, this fraternization appeared false. One British soldier flashed his squad mate a hidden dagger, while another refused to smoke German cigarettes, fearing they might be poisoned. When one squad of Bavarians discussed whether to meet the British, the corporal snapped at them. Such a thing should not happen in wartime. Have you no German sense of honor left at all? They weren't surprised. The night before, the same soldier had refused to join the unit's Christmas service. Corporal Hitler was odd like that. But his disapproval reflected the new general's view, and that was exactly the situation the field marshals had feared. Commanders dispatched senior officers to threaten disciplinary action. In some sectors, the armistice came to an orderly close. Officers from both sides saluted and fired revolvers into the air, signaling that the war was back on. In a few places, troops resisted until nearly New Year's Eve, but the generals would not have it. German command dispatched snipers to break the ceasefire. French ordered an artillery barrage, letting the machine of war roll over the human connections of the frontline troops. Nothing like this Christmas truce would ever happen again. The generals wouldn't have it. On Christmas Eve of 1915, British officers ordered a 24-hour artillery barrage. Men who tried to form a truce were court-martialed. Machine guns drowned out Christmas carols. The generals didn't have to be bothered. The spirit of the truce was unique to 1914, a symptom of a younger war. By 1915, those troops had experienced chlorine gas and were creeping bombardments from Zeppelins bombing London. The Battle of Verdun would end just before the holiday, leaving 750,000 casualties. Indeed, many of the men who celebrated in No Man's Land that day would never see another Christmas. One of those unlucky ones was the very same lieutenant who had given his silk scarf to the German officer. He died 3 months later while trying to save a wounded comrade. He was 25 years old. And yet that officer is not remembered for his military achievements, but rather for this sign of humanity in the darkest of times. He and so many others are remembered for a victory entirely their own, when a group of brave men ventured into the lines of the enemy, trusting their enemies not to shoot and believing that humanity was better than the bonfire it had built for itself. This is a story that tends to choke me up just a little bit, and I hope that it reflects a little bit of Christmas spirit into your day today. Merry Christmas to you, and have a very happy holiday.